You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to Tech Thursday. This is Patrick Sheehan. I'm going to be with you for the next hour or so, looking at all the latest in tech and answering any questions you might have. As always, you can call 069-66200, or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800, or you can email patrick102fm@gmail.com. To start off with today, we have some good news. IBM are creating 800 roles in Ireland over the next 3 years. IBM is to create 800 additional jobs across Ireland over the next 3 years. The roles will be in areas such as research and development, digital sales and consulting. They will be created in IBM's Dublin campus, as well in the office in Cork and its Red Hat subsidiary in Waterford. The new high-tech jobs will be involved in building advanced software based on generative artificial intelligence. Every tech job now is AI. AI has gone crazy. In high-growth areas like security, automation and hybrid cloud. IBM says the availability of talented workforce in Ireland was amongst the main reasons for its investment. As IBM continues to help organizations transform their businesses with hybrid cloud and AI, attracting, developing and retaining talent remains a key priority, says James Kavanagh, IBM Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Today's announcement is a result of our strong relationship with IDA Ireland and the Irish government, but it's also a testament to the calibre of talent here in Ireland. So that's very good. Yeah, we've always had a good talent for medical sector and IT sector and things like that. So it's good that it's continuing. Intel's Thunderbolt Share lets two PCs control each other over a USB cable. The app lets them share screens and peripherals and storage. Why you can't just plug a USB cable between two PCs, drag your mouse cursor between the screens and drop files between them as if they were a single machine? Well, you can and have for years, but Intel may be about to turbocharge the idea with Thunderbolt Share. It's a proprietary app that Intel will be licensing to laptop, desktop and accessory manufacturers to bundle with new hardware. Install it on two Thunderbolt 4 or 5 computers, connect them with a Thunderbolt cable, and you should be able to share your mouse, keyboard, screens, storage and other USB peripherals, drag and drop files at Thunderbolt speeds, and sync data between them. It won't let you share an internet connection though, but that could be very handy though for dragging and dropping files and things like that. Intel says you can also mirror one PC screen to another at 1080p resolution and 60 frames per second at low latency with zero compression, and the PCs can connect through a Thunderbolt dock or monitor if that's more convenient than a direct link. It doesn't strictly require a Thunderbolt certificate computer, mind you, or even necessarily an Intel processor. USB 4 and Thunderbolt 3 connections may work. We just don't guarantee it. We won't be providing support for it, says Intel Thunderbolt Chief Jason Ziller. So that's very handy. It does require the app, which Intel will charge OEMs an extra license fee to provide exclusively with new hardware. Having to buy a subset of Thunderbolt computer or Thunderbolt accessory kind of limits the environments in which this might come in handy. Intel says you do get a second license with any Thunderbolt Share PC you buy, or two with any accessory though. So yeah, it could come in handy. So if you buy it, you'll get another one with it, so you can install it on your other computer so you can share between them. So that's quite handy. Yeah, very, very handy for in some situations. The normal way for doing things like that would be network, you know, have a connected network where you can drop things back and forth between computers and things like that. But a direct link would be even handier and quicker, I presume. Dell leaked details, next generation Windows on ARM chips, 24-hour laptops and much more. A huge 311-page leak spills Dell's XPS plans and possibly even NVIDIA's next generation GPU timing. We all know Dell is getting ready to launch a new ARM-powered variant of its popular XPS 13 laptop. But now a confidential document has leaked a lot more details on Dell's future XPS plans. Video Cards, with a Z, has obtained and published a 311-page document from Dell that goes into details on the XPS 13. That's due soon, and when we can expect to see Qualcomm's next-generation chips for Windows and ARM. Qualcomm's powered Snapdragon X Elite laptops look set to debut next week, with Asus announcing it has a new AI PC ready to launch on Monday. The same day, Microsoft is holding a Surface and Windows event, all about Windows on ARM. Dell's own XPS 13 variant running the Snapdragon X Elite leaked just a few days ago. And this new document from Video Cards revealed it will ship in three versions that have different displays: Full HD, Quad HD Plus, and OLED. The latest leak confirmed that Dell is planning to refresh its XPS 13 Plus from 2022 with a touch bar on top, on the top row, and only two USB-C ports for I/O. Battery life will naturally vary per model, but web browsing is listed at around 13 hours on Full HD Plus display, more than 12 hours in Quad HD version, and around 9 hours on the LG Display OLED variant. Local video playback is rated at more than 29 hours on Full HD version, which, if accurate, is an impressive improvement on the current crop of Windows laptops. 29 hours was very good. There's also a mention in this leaked document of a new tandem OLED panel from LG Display that will be used in the upcoming XPS 13. LG Display first introduced tandem OLED panels in 2019, primarily for automotive displays, but it's expanded to a 17-inch foldable tandem OLED panel last year. Apple just launched a new iPad Pro with a tandem OLED panel, which uses two OLED layers to improve brightness and the lifespan of the panel. So that's very good. Some new Dell XPS on the way. Europe isn't happy with Timo. The European consumer organization BEUC and 17 Services Act is urging the EU to designate Temu as a very large online platform to make it comply, as it did with Shein last month. The complaint says that Temu does not guarantee its users a safe, predictable, and trustworthy online environment, as the law requires. Concerns include Temu's gamification features, misleading products, and overall lack of transparency regarding its business operations. There's no harm to get them under a proper structure and make sure that things are kept above board and things like that. A lot of the websites are similar. Wish and AliExpress and those, a lot of them are very similar. They have a lot of push notifications trying to get you back again, and oh, look what you've just won or something. You click on it and it's like a kind of a fake voucher, like a pretend voucher a lot of the time, and they have but I have used Temu now, in fairness. The delivery, compared to a lot of the, say, the likes of Wish and them, or AliExpress, you're waiting over a month on average, month and a half maybe. But with them, I found it much quicker. I found it a couple of weeks. Stuff was coming in a couple of weeks, which is pretty good. And the sizes, say with clothes and things like that, it happened years ago, where I got a t-shirt in my size, and then it arrived and it was like six sizes smaller. It's like the Chinese sizes and things like that. But they do have a better size. I tried it again recently because there was like something, even shoes, and I have a big shoe size, like size 16 shoes, 15 or 16, depends on the brand. But they had shoes in my size. So I said, look, it's like €8. I'll try it out for a pair of them. They came and they fitted. So I was surprised now. And then I tried clothes as well, and the clothes were fitting as well. So they're a bit better nowadays than they were years ago. Like Wish was famous for that years ago. You'd order not even clothes or shoes, but like order a mouse mat that looked like, 3 feet by 2 feet, this massive mouse mat. And then it arrives and it's like tiny, it's the size of a plate. They were famous for that kind of thing, but they do seem to be a little bit better, and the shipping seems to be a little bit faster. But it would be no harm to get them under the proper designation and the proper online platform and things like that, so to kind of keep everything above board and in line and everything. So no harm in that. Fujifilm's new X-T50 has a film simulation dial and a questionable price. In several key areas, the company's latest camera is on par with the X, T5, but it's smaller, lighter, and designed for a more mainstream audience. Fujifilm has just announced a new pair of cameras with the company's X Summit Sydney event. There's a medium format GFX100S2, which frankly falls outside my scope of interest and budget. The more mainstream of the two is the XT50, which is a follow-up but not a replacement for the XT32, which will remain in Fujifilm's lineup moving forward. The XT50 is a hodgepodge of the camera maker's new and old tech. Let's start with the new. The body has a fresh, more rounded shape that's unlike anything else on the X series lineup, and there's a film simulation dial right at the top. A first for any Fujifilm camera. You get several preset film simulations to the circle between which you can choose your own for three customizable slots. Though you can't set to custom film recipes, still the dial goes to show what a vital part of Fujifilm's appeal that these simulations have become over the years. So it's FS1, FS2, C, STO, V, RA. So it's old. It's like simulating a film camera from years ago. Built into the new digital one. The XT50 includes the same 40 megapixel sensor as the XT5 and the XH2, plus the accompanying fifth generation processor, so the camera offers a substantial increase in both resolution and autofocus performance compared to the XT32. It also gains a 7-stop in-body image stabilization system. The far less expensive XT32 lacks IBIS altogether. Continuous shooting is limited to 8 frames per second with the mechanical shutter, whereas the XT5 and it's not a mirrorless camera, it has a mechanical shutter, and XH2 can both hit 15 frames per second. For storage, there's a single UHS-II SD card slot. Video performance has also been dialed up significantly. They have it's on the verge. They have some of the stats there, 4K. It's kind of the standard kind of specs for one of those cameras. So some of the prices there, the XT32 starts at $899, and then the XH2S goes up to $2,499. So they're into the professional camera kind of pricing. There's a center one, a middle one with a fixed lens. It's the X800V is £1,599. So they're not cheap, but that's the new range of Fujifilm cameras on the market. Their kit lens is also getting a notable revamp. The company's well-regarded 18-55 glass is being replaced by a new lighter 16-50mm f2.8 to 4.8 lens. That now features water resistance. So that'll be the kit lens that will come with it. Grok is arriving to Europe. I don't know if the arrival of an AI with swagger is good or bad news. I only know it's funny and will surely lie to you, like all the other LLM-based forms of artificial intelligence. Grok just announced that they are excited to bring Grok to Europe. Today we are beginning to roll out access to Grok's AI search assistant feature to ex-premium subscribers. Once the European elections have concluded, we will continue the rollout of contextualized trends for all users. So Grok is Twitter's AI. It's Elon Musk's AI, and he wanted to do one that was more less serious and had a bit of it spoke to you like a person having the crack, you know, makes jokes and gives you funny answers. And like, if you ask it questions, it'll answer your question, but give you a bit of sense of humor and a bit of personality as well in its response. From ChatGPT to Gemini, how AI is rewriting the internet. Big players including Microsoft with Copilot, Google and Gemini, and OpenAI with GPT-4o are making AI chatbot technology previously restricted to test labs more accessible to the general public. How do those large language models programs work? OpenAI's GPT-3 told us that AI uses a series of autocomplete-like programs to learn language, and that these programs analyze the statistical properties of the language to make educated guesses based on the words you've typed previously. or in the words of James Vincent, a human person. These AI tools are vast, autocomplete systems trained to predict which words follow the next in any given sentence. As such, they have no hard-coded database of facts to draw on, just the ability to write plausible-sounding statements. This means they have a tendency to preset false information as truth, since whether a given sentence sounds plausible does not guarantee its factuality. But there are so many more pieces to the AI landscape that are coming into play, and so many name changes. Remember when we were talking about Bing and Bard before those tools were rebranded with new names? They're saying a big issue for AI in the future is that AI trolls through the internet and finds common answers to questions and uses that to answer your questions or compiles different things. But the problem is, it makes a lot of stuff up itself, or it comes out with wrong answers, and those answers are on the internet then as well. So then in future, AIs are getting answers from older AIs that were also wrong, and then giving it back again. So it's kind of muddying the water. It's diluting the truth even more and more, because they make mistakes, and then the other ones find those mistakes and use that as part of their answers in the future. So it's kind of makes things worse and worse. But I'm sure as things go on, they'll get smarter and smarter, and they'll be able to figure out things like that. But it is one of the concerning things about AI going forward. Samsung mocks Apple's crushing iPad Pro ad with its own uncrushed pitch. A guitar and a Galaxy Tab S9 probably won't put anyone away from Logic Pro, but it's the thought that counts, right? So this is actually very good. It was actually really well done. So this ad shows a girl walking into a warehouse, and it looks very like the one from the Apple ad that we were talking about last week. So Apple made a bit of a faux pas. They had a new ad for their new really thin iPad. And in the ad, they had this big industrial kind of crusher. And they had pianos and guitars and paintbrushes and lots of different musical instruments and art implements and things like that. And then the machine came down and crushed everything. And then it lifted back up again, and inside was the new iPad. And of course they were saying, you know, everything is condensed into one thing, but it just looks so bad, destroying all these beautiful musical instruments and everything. And then people were saying, yeah, this shows that Apple are crushing people's creativity, and these things are pieces of art as well as, you know, a beautiful guitar or a lovely piano or something like that, or the items themselves help the creativity. It's not just they're actually have a lot of use and a lot of history and a lot of importance to people. So Samsung's new ad was this girl walking into a warehouse that looks like the one from the Apple ad, and there's all broken things all over the ground, but she picks up a guitar, and the guitar is kind of half burned and half damaged, and there's a hole in it and everything. And she walks over with this guitar and sits down, and there's all paint, all kind of dried paint all over this industrial looking machine. And she has a tripod, and she puts her Samsung tablet on the tripod, and the tablet has all the music on it. I presume she's reading the music off of it, and she sits down, she tunes up the guitar, and she plays beautiful music from this damaged guitar. So it really, it just shows that it's their tool is not trying to crush creativity. It's trying to help people use the things for their own advantage. So they're in other words, we're trying to help, and they're trying to crush the creativity, or they want to replace everything. We want to be part of the art and part of the experience and everything like that. So it was well done. Now, in fairness, it was a good response to Apple. So that's the old rivalry that was happening for years and years, the Apple and Samsung rivalry, and it had gone quiet, but now it's back with a vengeance. It's really, really well done. Google's I/O 2024, all the news from the developer conference. Google has a lot of AI news coming out of the developer-focused I/O conference. with the company's keynote showing off key products like its flagship Gemini AI model, which now has faster flash version to compete with the new faster GPT iteration, GPT 4.0. Or 4.0, that OpenAI announced a day earlier. Google is also redesigning search with AI overviews that promises to summarize the web in response to complex queries and ask photo assistants. Oh, yes, so I was seeing some of that. Searching for photos and things like that, you can ask the AI very specific. Show me a city photo with the red car in the background or something like that. If you can remember something about the photo you're searching for, and it'll know exactly what to look for. At the moment, it's like you can search faces or you can search... You can search specific, like I asked for, say, a white car. I had a white car years ago, a Mitsubishi Lancer, and I've been searching for that. Or so even Mitsubishi car, it can do that. But now it's going even more complex. It can help even more so. It can dig through your archive for the answer to a question like, what's my license plate? Oh, so it can really go into those kind of details. However, the flaws of AI search were unintentionally highlighted when its video search demo offered some terrible advice on how to fix a problem with your camera. That always happens when they show off these new devices. There's always something strange always happens. Whereas, remember back in the day, the iPhone 10. The iPhone X, the face unlock wouldn't work, and Tim Cook was wiping his face because I think they had kind of guessed that if you're sweating a lot, that the face unlock didn't work very well. So he kind of got a clot or something, and he was wiping his face, and then it unlocked. But he had a bit of trouble with it, and these kind of things often happen. Elon Musk, of course, showing off the Cybertruck, and then he throws the ball at the window and cracks the glass. But in fairness, though, if it was probably a normal car, the ball would have gone, it was like a steel ball or something, it would have gone straight through the glass. But lots of these funny things have happened over the years. When it comes to other kinds of hardware, Google's TVs are becoming home hubs, and new home APIs will give app developers access to all kinds of automations. So that's good now. Google TVs will become hubs. I was always wondering why they didn't connect better, why more things didn't happen between the TV and the speakers and things like that. I always thought it wouldn't be great to have the TV go out live, like you could create your own surround sound almost over the Google Home speakers. So I have the Google Chromecast with TV. If I could just cast to all, cast to the speakers. So watching a movie, you could create your own surround sound kind of system almost. That would be very good. Home APIs will give app developers access to all kinds of automations. Streaming apps like Max and Peacock are coming to Android Auto. And Wear OS 5 will extend battery life for smartwatches. So that's good. That's a problem with a lot of the Google smartwatches. I've had cheaper ones. Well, the Bands especially. But even I had... The Poco Watch 4 or the Pro 4 Pro or something like that. It could answer calls. It could do all the same kind of stuff, but it didn't have the Android software. And the battery would last like 12 or 14 days. And then I got an Android watch, a diesel watch with full Android software, and it could do a lot of the same things. And you could put your official Android apps, which was very good. But I'd be lucky to get a day out of it. The battery life was very poor. If I turned off everything and just had it, kind of almost doing nothing, I could get a day out of it, which was kind of not the point. You want your messages to pop up and you want it to vibrate and you want to be able to take calls and all that, which you could, but just the battery life is very, very short. Now, I understand it's maybe a little bit better with some of the more expensive, say the Samsung Galaxy watches and things like that, but a friend of mine has one, the Galaxy Watch 4, the bigger one, is it the Sport or something, or there's a name to it, but he only gets like a day and a half at the most out of it, and he has pretty much everything turned off on that as well. So they're not the best for battery life. I'm sure they could put bigger batteries in them or something like that, but it's going to make them very bulky then. But hopefully the new chips and things like that will help to improve their life a lot. Some of the highlights are Wear OS 5 triples down on battery life, so that's good. Android will be able to detect if your phone has been snatched. ADT's new security system has facial recognition powered by Google Nest. Google opens its smart home to everyone and will make Google TV's home hubs. We have to stop ignoring AI's hallucination problem. Don't know what that means. Google now offers web search and an AI opt-out button. Google's new Learn LM AI model focuses on education. So that's some of the main highlights. Any other? It says show more. Google's Gemini video search makes a factual error in demo. Yeah, so that was some of the mistake it made. Blink and you missed it. Google has a new pair of prototype AR glasses. Google's I.O. 2024, everything announced. So yeah, that's just going through some of the different announcements they made at their conference. NASA's quiet supersonic aircraft is getting closer to taking flight. We've now been waiting for the Quest X with two S's, Quest, X-59, and the return of supersonic air travel for years now. And NASA's latest update says things are moving along. So NASA are developing a passenger jet? Or is it a private jet or something like that? A flight readiness review board composed of independent experts from across NASA has completed a study of the X-59 project team's approach to safety for the public and staffing during ground and flight testing. I was thinking, are NASA not? Were they just testing it, or are they actually building it? Yeah, a flight readiness review board composed of independent experts from across NASA has completed a study of the X-59. Or maybe they are building it, but they also just got other people from the space side of things or something, or maybe independent people or people that weren't on that project to test it and to see was everything safe. But this is just a kind of a short article about it. But it looks like a fighter jet or something. It looks very pointy looking. It doesn't look that big, but maybe it looks like a kind of like a four-person private jet size or something like that. But it's kind of very shaped like a fighter jet kind of size. Google Sheets' new formatting feature has Excel switchers excited. Google Sheets has one-click tables, which could make it a lot more convenient. They have now added a way to create easily formatted tables and sheets with one click, something Excel has had for years. Now, Excel have had it, so they're finally getting it on board with Google as well. Now, if you have a block of data that you'd like to quickly turn into its own little island of filters and sorting rules, that's fully possible or will be soon, depending on where you are in Google's rollout queue. As a person who's maintained a shared budget spreadsheet in Google Sheets for about a decade, and who would have loved not to have to create any of my filters and sort out pieces by piece, I'm excited, and judging by a little cursory search, I'm not alone. People have been asking for a self-contained table for years. So they finally added that to Google, which is very good. Humane says AI pins just got a GPT-4o upgrade. Based on so many reviews, Humane's AI pin did not live up to its AI gadget hype at launch. And now the company says things are getting better with the addition of OpenAI's just launched GPT-4o AI model, with product design lead George Kedenberg claiming it's faster now with better answers. If you have one, let us know how things are going. Update is now out for AI pin customers. So they've added that. Actually, Nothing will make the Nothing phone, but make a lot of different earbuds and things as well. They have announced that ChatGPT will be added to all their earbuds in the next update. The Nothing X app or something like that that goes along with their devices can be updated, and you can ask it questions on your earbuds and things like that. It's going to be added in the next update, I think near the end of May, something like that. So ChatGPT will be added to Even the other, is it no, CME by Nothing, which is made by Nothing but sells on a more budget-friendly kind of a basis. Those ones will be, the earbuds they sell under that brand will also be getting ChatGPT. So that's to be added to all of their earbud devices soon. So it's good. Like, I have the Nothing Buds 1, which is from, I don't know, 3 years ago, something like that, or 4 years ago, maybe, at least 3 years ago anyway. And I use them fairly regularly. They're pretty good. They have noise cancellation and everything like that. Very nice sound. So they will now be getting ChatGPT added for, you know, no extra cost or anything like that. So it's kind of handy. I mightn't use it that much. I've had Google on my Sony headphones for years, and I don't think I've ever used it, so I mightn't use it that much, but I suppose it's nice to have it if I need it, kind of thing. China's NIO unveils Tesla Model Y rival. So a new electric car coming out of China. There's a lot of that the electric car kind of industry has finally allowed, kind of enabled Chinese cars to sell in Europe and around the world, because they weren't huge car makers before, but EVs seem to be, I don't know why, was it just the different rules for emissions and things like that were difficult to get past? But with EVs, that isn't to be worried about. So maybe that's why they're able to start selling cars. I see a lot of those, and they're a nice looking car, the BYD Seal. There's a couple of them around Newcastle West. I've seen them driving around. Very sleek look, nice looking cars. I'm not sure about the exact specs of them, but they look nice. They're nice to look at anyway. Chinese electric vehicle maker NIO has unveiled its first car from its new lower price brand Onvo in a direct challenge to Tesla's best-selling car. With prices starting at 219,900 yuan, which is $30,465, the L60 SUV is more than 10% cheaper than the world's most popular EV, the Tesla Model Y, which has a price tag of 249,901. I don't know if it's going to be sold in around the world, or we'll have to see. It comes in the same week that US President Joe Biden announced he would quadruple the import tax on electric cars from China. Like other EV makers, Tesla has been struggling with falling sales in the face of intense competition from Chinese brands. The vehicle was unveiled in Shanghai by NIO's chief executive, William Li, who said the company aimed to rival Tesla's Model Y and the Toyota RAV4. With technologies evolving and people's understanding in smart EV deepening, today it's time for those to redefine new standards for family cars, Mr. Li said. The company has stated that started taking orders for the L60 and aims to begin deliveries by September. NIO executives said they have plans to launch a new ONVO model every year as part of efforts to expand into the family car market. The brand could also help NIO build up its presence outside of its home country. However, it faces 100% tariffs in the US and ongoing anti-subsidy probe launched by the European Union into EV imports from China. So the EU are kind of clamping down a bit as well. Electric car brands around the world are facing major challenges as they face slower sales and increased competition. In April, Tesla started to lay off more than 10% of its global EV workforce. Later that month, the company announced its profits for the first time. For the first 3 months of the year had fallen by more than half compared to the same time last year. Meanwhile, China's BYD says its profits had fallen as it was hit by weaker demand and a price war in the world's largest car market. So yeah, it's a kind of a volatile market at the moment. Yeah, there is a kind of a dip in electric cars. I think as they get older, and a lot of people are seeing the kind of the degradation of batteries, and how, you know, 4 or 5 years down the line, your 300 mile car might be down to 150 miles or 100 miles or something like that. You see these Nissan Leafs with like 60 miles is all that the video I was watching that the guy bought a 2014 one, and was it even as low as like 49 miles or 52 miles or something. It was really low, the battery life left in it, so like you wouldn't even get to Limerick and back so from Newcastle West. So that's a big another big downside. And plus is, you know, the the budget cars, the cheaper the car you buy, the less miles you're going to get. Whereas with petrol is, you know, we talked about this before, is, you know, you buy a 1 liter car and you're probably going to get, you know, you fill it, it's quick to fill up anyway, but even so, you can get, you know, 600-700 kilometers out of a tank. Whereas, you know, the bigger cars might even use more, you know, a big 3 liter car might even use more, but it, either way, it doesn't matter too much because you can fill them up really quick. So, you know, it's going to be a volatile market until some revolution is going to come, whether it's solid state batteries or graphene or something like that, and will make very fast charging, long lasting batteries and long life batteries with a lot less degradation, and or even batteries that can be swapped out, you know, something like they could be lower down underneath the car, or like a slot in the back bumper can, or the whole back bumper can kind of unlock and tilt down from the boot or something like that, and you can just slide the whole thing out the back of the car or something like that, and it has a kind of a push-in connection or something. They'll, I don't know, there's lots of different or they were on about years ago that it could be technically possible, but it wouldn't be massive infrastructure, is to put like wireless charging pads along the road, so the car, they'd only need tiny batteries and they'd just be constantly charging as you drive along. But that would be a massive infrastructure, and I don't know how that would how that would work out, but it was all these different theories of what could be done. China's Alibaba profits tumble 86% through revenue estimates. China's Alibaba Group Holding reported an 86% plunge in fourth quarter profit on Tuesday, primarily due to valuation changes from equity investments, pushing its US-listed shares down almost 6% in early trading, even though revenue beat forecasts. It also announced it would revive a plan first floated in 2022 to upgrade its secondary listing in Hong Kong to a primary listing, while retaining its primary listing in New York. It also claims it aims to complete its dual primary listing in August. China's largest e-commerce group by market share has had a tumultuous year since announcing the biggest shakeup of its 25-year history in March 2023, splitting into 6 units and refocusing on its core business, including domestic e-commerce. Consumers in China have also been spending carefully after the COVID-19 pandemic amid an economic slowdown and prolonged property slump. Of course, to see there's a lot of competition now as well. You know, do you see the likes of Wish isn't being used as much as it used to? It's kind of gone quiet again. There was Joom as well. So these, a lot of the apps come and go. They've been around a long time now, 25 years, but a lot of the apps are coming and going. Temu and Shein now seem to be the bigger ones, but there'll be probably some other ones now that will come along and give, you know, free shipping or give another different incentives and get all the customers to come over there. So it is definitely a volatile market, for sure. A senior government minister is warning social media firms that they face tougher regulation if they don't engage with the state. A task force on the abuse of politicians yesterday stated that X were unavailable when it contacted them about ways to limit and block abusive behaviour. Public expenditure minister Pascal Donoghue says that a level beyond turning up its nose to authorities here. He says if social media firms continue with that behaviour, they will face consequences.
Fewer and fewer normal, moderate people will use and engage with that platform at all. That will have consequences for it as a business over time. The social licence which organisations like X depend upon in terms of how they are regulated, that itself will begin to change. Because if you're not willing to engage with the state, if you're not willing to engage with how you're regulated, that will have significant consequences then for how organisations like that can operate in the future.
I suppose what the company themselves say is that you have a block button. So if someone, you know, all these ministers and stuff have staff, and if they're monitoring their social media and they see, oh, look, this person is calling them this or that, just block them and things like that. I suppose that's one way of doing it. Maybe there should be a different level for politicians. You know, when you have the X premium, should they have a different level where people who sign up, like politicians or something like that, that replies to their comments that would be auto-blocked if there's bad language is used, or if there's insulting or threatening language is used, that it would auto-block the message. Say, you know, somebody's trying to say you're a whatever to the politician, and then tries to send, and it says unable to send to this person due to the use of bad language or whatever like that. But I don't know, you know, it's, I suppose X in the US are go by the, you know, the Second Amendment, the kind of freedom of speech, that unless it's directly threatening violence against somebody, that people have freedom to say what they want and freedom to disagree and freedom to kind of insult in many ways. You know, you're useless, you're whatever, and names to different people, and that's part of freedom of speech. But if you say, I'm going to do this to you, I'm going to do that to you, or something should be done to you, you know, in a threatening way, then the police can be called and things like that if actual threats are made. And that's kind of the Second Amendment, and that's what Elon Musk wanted to kind of do with X as much as possible. But he also said he will obey the laws of every specific country as well. And so I suppose whatever rules the Irish government put upon them, they will follow. But I suppose it's good that people have a chance to say, you know, their disagreements with public figures and things like that. But it's not good to, and it's not useful for the person either to insult or to, you know, if I had a disagreement and I wanted to comment on it, I would just say, you know, this statute I don't agree with, or I didn't agree with this being done, and I, you know, hopefully things can change, or state my disagreement. I think you made a very wrong decision there, and you know, something like that, and make my own case. And without abusing, because abusing somebody is just, you're losing the argument immediately. So it's never going to help you. It's never going to help your whatever cause you're behind. It's not going to be helped by insulting or threatening somebody. An 11-year-old from Donegal has received a letter from David Attenborough after he wrote to the veteran filmmaker about his love of animals. Kyle Skeffington, who's a fifth-class pupil at Scoil Isagon in Buncrana, contacted the 98-year-old as part of a letter-writing project and received a handwritten note and signed photo in response, according to the Irish Examiner. Kyle hopes to become a wildlife photographer and says the Arctic fox is his favourite animal. So that's really nice. You'd always hear about those stories years ago, writing to somebody really famous, and you write to Frank Sinatra, and you think that's the end of it, but then you get a letter back a year later, and it's like, oh my God, I got a letter, you know, from somebody famous, or a US president or something. So it's nice to see that something like that still happens nowadays, so that's very nice. More than 10% of people are still using 1234 as their digital PIN, despite a rise in scams and cyber attacks. An analysis of leaked databases from Information is Beautiful shows people are still using common numbers to protect crucial information. 1234 is still the most common PIN, followed by 1111 and 0000, as well as 1212 and 47s. The least common PIN number is 8557. I've never used 1234 on anything. Too common altogether. Reading is the most popular way people choose to relax before bed, with almost half winding down with a book, and more than a third watch TV or scroll on social media, while 1 in 5 chat on the phone or catch up with their partner before going to sleep. 18% say they like to cuddle with a pet, and 5% clip their toenails, according to the poll by Eve Sleep. So yeah, what I usually do is I used to, like, if I had a I have a YouTube video of a show, like a podcast kind of thing on video or something, but the light isn't good. So what I usually do is put on a radio show or a podcast late at night with a talk on it, and not music and things like that, but with talk on it, and have it at a low enough level, but I can hear what's going on, and something that's interesting but not too interesting. Because if it's too good, I'd be like, okay, I have to listen to the full story and keep listening, and I'd be awake for a lot longer. So something that's have a chat with somebody, like the, say the Joe Rogan Experience, and talking to like a scientist or something like that, that would be semi-interesting, and have it on, listen a bit to it, and then kind of go to sleep, and then when it finishes, it just stops. Yeah, I made a mistake before as well. I had like listening to YouTube, and I have YouTube Premium, so I can turn it off, say turn off the screen and still listen. So I was listening to something nice and calm, and this kind of a conference thing or a TED talk kind of thing or something like that. And, you know, the person was talking and I was kind of snoozing, fell asleep. And then I forgot to turn off the player follow. And all of a sudden something really loud came on and just woke me up. And I was, what the hell is that? And it turned on my phone. It was like, oh, it player followed. It followed onto the another video that was, which was really loud, woke me up. Some big intro music or something like that. So I definitely turn off the player follow if I have something on. But that's what I usually do at night. Jeremy Clarkson has been crowned as the UK's sexiest man for a second year in a row. The presenter beat off competition from the likes of Prince William and Idris Elba. Clarkson scored 9 out of 10 points in the poll conducted by Illicit Encounters, an online dating site for married people. Spider-Man actor Tom Holland came in second place, followed by Prince William. Also in the top 10 sexiest UK men in England are footballer Gareth Southgate, Dermot O'Leary and Cork's Cillian Murphy. He's not UK, though. He wouldn't be happy about that. But UK and Ireland, maybe. But I presume they were obviously joking when they... No insult. I'm actually a big fan of Jeremy Clarkson, but UK's sexiest man, though. That's funny. They still have a sense of humour. Oh, there's just the story about the Chinese vehicle, the Anvo L60. But they give an Irish price as well, or they give a euro price, €27,000. That's more than 10% cheaper than the world's most popular EV, the Tesla Model Y. So, yeah, just under 27 grand. So, but how much would it cost in Ireland, though, by the time it's imported and VRT and all that? It'll probably cost 100 grand. Ridiculous, all this extra charges. A trailer for the new TV series, which will be a prequel to the Dune movies, has been released, featuring Emily Watson and Olivia Williams. The pair play sisters on the show, which is set thousands of years before the 2021 science fiction film. Dune Prophecy will be available for streaming on Max this autumn. I actually haven't seen the second Dune yet. I didn't go to the cinema. I kind of missed it when it was in the cinema, and I actually really wanted to see it, but there was different things happening and I was busy, and I kind of forgot about it then, but it's a pity. The two main stars were on the red carpet for the premiere of the latest Mad Max film in Cannes. Furiosa is set 9 months after Fury Road, and it debuted at the French Festival. Anna Taylor-Joy plays the title character. Chris Hemsworth takes on the role of a warlord leader. So Anna Taylor-Joy, you might remember, was from The Queen's Gambit, the very good movie. Yeah, was it movie or TV show? Movie, I think. About chess, and she was a chess prodigy. It was very, very good. There are calls for the government to protect Ireland's food security by supporting farmers and the food production industry. The Irish Farmers Journal Agribusiness report says bad weather, sluggish global markets and the overhang from significant investments in capacity are the serious challenges for the sectors. Farmers say they should be rewarded for protecting nature as they look to diversify their income streams. The report author, Larkin Roach Kelly, says there are huge obstacles that need to be overcome.
People don't want to go into farming. They see it as a low-income, long-hours, lonely occupation. On the food producer side as well, then we're seeing with the recent hikes in the minimum wage, that's putting some pressure on the food producer side, because even though food producers generally don't pay minimum wage, the overall wage expectation in the economy rise. So we're seeing lots of these things that costs are coming into the thing, and that's building on top of the inflation we saw coming in the last year and a half, 2 years.
Definitely, like farmers definitely need to be protected, you know. There's less and less farmers now, and a lot of the farmers' kids they see how difficult the life is and how low the income is for a lot of farmers, and they're not so eager to carry on from their parents running farms. So there definitely needs to be better supports and definitely protection for farmers, because it's a kind of an industry that's under attack in some countries. with farmers protesting all over Europe and all over the world. And they definitely need to be protected and taken care of, you know, because we have a very high food quality here in Ireland, and we're famous around the world for our high quality beef and other products, our butter and everything, and we need to protect that as much as possible. Small and medium enterprises in the retail and hospitality sectors will be eligible for grants of up to €5,000. It's part of a total scheme from the government worth €66 million to help small retailers absorb increases in to the minimum wage. The employer's PRSI threshold will also increase in October from €441 to €496. Jane McCabe is the head of retail excellence. She says they will need further supports.
I think we're on the start of a journey here now, and there is no magic solution. It's budget 2025 is going to be the real focus, and make sure that the government really understands what it's like for a small business to manage their P&L day in, day out, and what these costs do to that P&L. And we all know that the retail and hospitality sector is the backbone of all our communities and towns, and we want to ensure that they stay vibrant.
And our last story for today, Bruce Springsteen says he is ready to rock Cork into the ground. The Boss will play Super Value Park in Kyiv tonight. Gates open at 5 p.m. for the concert, and Springsteen and the E Street Band will take to the stage at 7 p.m. with no support act. The performer posted on Instagram to tell Cork he's on the way.
Hey everybody, we're in Dublin. Cork, we're coming your way, and we plan to rock you into the ground.
And that's been it for today. I hope you've enjoyed Tech Thursday. I've been Patrick Sheehan, and I'll be with you again next week. As always, you can email myself, patrick102fm@gmail.com, and get in your questions for next week's show. Thanks for listening. Talk to you again.
You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.